RadioStPete.com presents Job Talk with Dean Logan. Job Talk with Dean Logan is presented in part by Eagle Datagistics. Eagle Datagistics is one of the premier Oracle Gold partners on the East Coast. Eagle Datagistics, providing hardware and software sales, data recovery, DBA services, and recruiting. With more than 10 years in business, in downtown St. Petersburg, it's Eagle Datagistics. Now, let's go live to our studio on the 10th floor of the Plaza Tower in downtown St. Petersburg, the offices of Eagle Datagistics. Now, with Job Talk, here's Dean Logan.
And thank you, Joe Bordeaux, and welcome to Job Talk, the only radio program in Tampa Bay dedicated to talking about jobs. I'm your host, Dean Logan, and for those of you tuning into Job Talk for the first time, it's my goal to talk with the leaders of every employer I can in Tampa Bay, big and small, and in every possible industry, so that anyone who's considering moving their business or making a change in their employment will know what it's like to live, work, and play in Tampa Bay. All of my guests are making a positive difference in the community, and listening to Job Talk is a way to get to know them just a little bit better. And in the process, I have the wonderful opportunity to meet and talk with some very interesting people. My guest today is Mark Guthrie, the founder of Create3D and Biz360. Welcome to Job Talk, Mark.
Hello, Dean. Glad to be here.
So I appreciate you coming today, and I understand you've had a very busy morning. You were presenting at 1 Million Cops today. How did it go?
It was great. That is a really terrific St. Pete. Well, it's actually a nationwide organization, and we have a really fantastic chapter here in St. Pete.
Mm-hmm. So how did you get involved with that?
So so maybe just a word about what Million Cups is, mm-hmm. first of all. So in St. Pete, we meet once a week, and there's two entrepreneurs that will present their businesses. And basically, the only rules are under $4 million in revenue, no, under $1 million in revenue in less than 4 years in business.
Hmm. And that fits you right now?
It fits me now. Okay. And hopefully, I'll be out of that group over the $1 million revenue. But in the format is, it's kind of like Shark Tank, for people who've seen Shark Tank. Mm-hmm. You get 6 minutes to present your business, and then there's 20 minutes of Q&A where people just grill you about your business and ask you all sorts of questions. Trying to help you, trying to figure out what makes your business tick, and then figuring out how they can help you. Mm-hmm. And at the end, you ask, hey, this is what I need. So two presenters a week, it's really great. I encourage people, Google it, 1 Million Cups St. Pete, you'll find out about it.
And how many people were there today?
Gosh, I think there was probably 50, standing room only.
Mm-hmm. And it's been that way. Mm-hmm. But it also helps when you have good presenters. There's definitely interest generated there.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure you did one. Did they, when they asked you questions, anything particular stand out that was that may have helped you?
Yeah, I presented a couple times there. So this time, my focus, and we'll talk about this more with Create3D, is right now on the educational market and kids. I want to get 3D printing and design exposed to kids, junior high and high school age. So they gave me some ideas about where kids are already coming together for programs like the Boys Club, the Girls Club, some different organizations like that where we could offer 3D design and printing as an activity, mm-hmm. as a camp, so to speak.
Sounds good. And what is the process to actually present? Do you have to apply online, or is there a process? How does that work?
Oh, yeah. It's grueling.
Okay.
You do go online, and you submit your application. It's very brief, so it will only take you probably 5 or 10 minutes to fill out the profile. And then they'll schedule you in. You'll get contacted by the group, and they'll get you scheduled in. Mm-hmm. So, if you've got a business and you're in that early stages, I really encourage you to get online and apply.
And how long does it take from the time that you apply to actually the time that you present?
It all depends on the number of people that are in the pipeline, but, you know, it's probably on average 3 weeks to probably no more than 2 months.
Okay, that's pretty fair. And the other thing I want to mention is that, you know, you're also involved in the Focus St. Pete program. As a matter of fact, that's where I first mm-hmm. became aware of you. I saw you around town. You know, can you tell our listeners about that program and what your role was?
Sure. So Focus St. Pete is a spinoff of Leadership St. Pete. So the leadership programs are around the country. St. Pete has one of the oldest. I think it's the second oldest in the country, continuous running. And we're talking like 80 years, something like that, maybe 50 years. But the idea with Leadership St. Pete is that you have to apply, and that is fairly rigorous. And it's a six-month program where you really get indoctrinated to all aspects of our city, county, and the state. And there'll be a seminar every 2 weeks, half day to sometimes 3 days long, about healthcare in our community, about tourism marketing in our community, about sports marketing in our community, all these incredible topics, government, history, and you meet some fantastic people. So that's a committed six-month program, rigorous to get in. Focus St. Pete is an abbreviated version of that. We do it over 4 days.
Okay. And, you know, I'd like to talk a little bit more about the leadership program, too. So you're talking about a rigorous program to get in.
Mm-hmm.
What are they looking for?
Well, it's they're looking for people that do want to sink their roots into the community and contribute and see this as a vehicle for them to learn about the community. It's not about just making business contacts, mm-hmm. even though you will do that. It's much more than that. It's so they're looking for their people that have some community service and that want to contribute to the community and building businesses in the community, or maybe they're in the public sector too. And then there's just a lot of people applying. So then that increases the competition for getting in. There's only about 35 people accepted a year, and the applications are in the fall.
Wow. I was going to ask how big the classes are, but mm-hmm. 35 people only. And how many out of the 35 selected, how many applied generally?
Probably like 150. Those numbers
really?
Are kind of guarded. But
wow.
Yeah.
So they're pretty select in who they accept as well. Okay, great. And getting back to the Focus St. Pete, when and how often is that program available?
Focus St. Pete we're doing annually also. The next one is not scheduled right now, but if people want to send me an email, I can put them on the list, and I'll put them on the list for getting invited when we schedule that.
That'll be great. We'll make sure we get that address out at the end of the show for sure. All right. And I'm speaking with Mark Guthrie, the founder of Biz360 and Create3D. So, Mark, I want to let everyone get to know you a little bit better before we talk about your business there. I know. So where are you from originally?
I'm from Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
Colorado High.
And how long were you there?
Basically, junior high, high school, and college. I call that my home.
Mm-hmm. Great. And from there, what did you, from after college and so on, what did you do from there?
Yep. So I got into the tech sector right after college. So I'm a graduate of Colorado State University, have a degree in information systems, and was fortunate enough to get hired by Hewlett-Packard in Silicon Valley.
Mm.
The other Bay Area,
mm-hmm.
and moved to Silicon Valley right after college.
And how long were you there?
The better part of 20 years.
Wow.
I did a stint, and I was fortunate enough to get a foreign assignment with Hewlett-Packard. So I lived in southwest Germany outside of Stuttgart for about a year and a half during that time.
Wow. How long were you with HP for in total?
In total, actually, two tours of duty with Hewlett-Packard.
Mm-hmm.
So together, it was about 13 years.
Wow. And what did you actually do in Germany for them?
Well, that was my first, as I said, tour of duty. My background originally was in information systems, so developing systems for businesses, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I was a programmer, and then I became a programming manager, and then we were developing a worldwide system for Hewlett-Packard's distribution operations. People probably don't remember this, but HP is who brought the LaserJet to market way back when, and we needed to figure out how to sell and ship a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
So I was working abroad with an international team designing the systems that would handle large volume distribution.
And did that experience kind of segue into your 3D experience too?
Well, just from the point of view of being technical, you know, developing those technical aptitude and technical skills to understand complex things.
Mm-hmm. So, how long after Silicon Valley? I understand you went to Scottsdale.
Yep. So, I did a few stops. So, some people may remember the tech wreck of 2000. Silicon Valley became kind of like the land of the Walking Dead. companies, world-class technology companies, were just decimated during that. So I did some soul-searching, decided now's the time to try some new places. So
that's the dot-com boom, right?
The dot-com boom.
Yeah, okay.
Right, right.
Gotcha.
So I made a list, and I've proceeded to move through all those places. So the first stop after Northern California was Seattle. So I lived there for several years.
How'd you like the weather?
Oh, boy, the weather's fantastic. Sorry, Seattle Chamber of Commerce, but my advice, go in August and September.
Yeah. Just, we have some friends that are from there, and they say it's pretty wet.
It's pretty wet.
Okay. A lot of green grass there. And then from Seattle, is that when you went to Scottsdale?
Yeah, I had to dry out, okay. Literally. Mm-hmm. So I went from the rainy Northwest and to the sunny Phoenix Desert and lived in Scottsdale.
And is that where you started Biz360?
It is.
Okay.
So at that point, it was time. Technology was... Biz360 had a focus on helping businesses leverage the internet, mm-hmm. and develop their internet presence, internet marketing, and all that. So, yeah, that was started in Scottsdale.
And how did you happen to come to St. Petersburg?
Yeah. So my financial advisor is actually from here, mm-hmm. and she was living in Scottsdale, and so we got to know each other, and over time she said, you know, I think you might really like St. Petersburg. So when I said I made that list after leaving Silicon Valley, I made a list. It was Seattle or Portland, choose one, and I chose Seattle, the desert, and I chose Scottsdale, Arizona. And then I just had this general idea about Florida. It seemed like a nice place. So I didn't have a city picked out. I just had Florida. So when I met my friend Christine, she said, I think you might like St. Pete. It will fit your personality.
And was she right?
She was dead on.
Yeah. What do you like about it here? For people that haven't been here, and maybe from people that are listening from Seattle, what would you say the difference is, and why would you recommend, or would you recommend St. Pete?
Well, I'm a water guy. So I'm all about life on the water and in that kind of lifestyle. So when I was told I could live on the water, I could have a boat dock in my backyard, could see some dolphins playing every once in a while, and just that whole lifestyle. Mm-hmm. Looking out your window is a great example of it. We're staring over part of St. Pete, but the beautiful St. Pete waterfront. Mm-hmm. And so that was the real thing for me.
Great. So tell me about when did you start Create 3D?
So Create 3D came out of the gates probably about a year ago, maybe a little bit less than that, maybe 9 months or so.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me about what it is and what you do and a little bit of history of the 3D printing as well?
Sure, sure. So, well, you know, maybe I'll back up just a little bit. So I mentioned I had two tours of duty with Hewlett Packard. The first one was software development. I left, moved into marketing and sales for software companies. Then years later, probably about 6 years later, I went back to HP because they had a leading edge 3D CAD package called Solid Designer. Leading edge, very different than everything else out on the market. So I went back to work for Hewlett Packard doing channel management and direct sales to large accounts. So that was back in the mid-90s. So that's where my 3D interest and skills started developing, was back in the early 90s. Mm-hmm. So then fast forward, you ask about 3D printing. So 3D printing has actually been around for probably like 20 years, but it's not been accessible. It's been very expensive, very hard to use. And it's only been in the last single-digit years, and really probably 4 or 5 years, that it's really become mainstream, affordable, easy to use. So MakerBot, who I'm an authorized reseller for, they were probably the very first to really consumerize the 3D printers and make it easy, make it accessible and affordable. So they're a market leader in that space, in the plastic 3D printing space.
Mm-hmm. And you brought some things here today that are examples. And were these made on the smaller machines? I'm sure they have different sizes and capabilities. Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about these things and how you came across them and how you made them, and et cetera.
So too bad we can't send a little video shot. But a couple of these things I like to show is that 3D printing allows you to create an object that's not really manufacturable with traditional means. Mm-hmm. Oh, and so, you know, you asked me about 3D printing. So let me back up and say, imagine, so 3D printing is also known, the formal term is additive manufacturing. So we're adding material, and it's added at very small layers. So imagine you've designed something with a design program, computer-aided design, also known as CAD. You make that model. So we're looking here at, imagine, listeners, I've got a rectangle here, a rectangular box, and inside of that box is a ball that moves back and forth. There's no way to put the ball inside of this because the openings are all too small. So
it's like a ship in a bottle.
Yeah, like a ship in a bottle. So I designed this with a CAD program called Tinkercad. And after I designed it, you can look at it on the computer. It's a computer model at that point, right? So the MakerBot software slices the model. So in this case, it probably made about 400 slices of this model, starting at the bottom. So this is all computerized, all done for you, but it makes this slice, and each slice has a unique footprint. That slice then gets printed one at a time, and they're about the thickness of a piece of paper. That's about how thick a slice is. And so imagine a glue gun that's moving back and forth and laying down a layer of glue that matches that slice exactly, one thickness of paper. It lays down that, and then it moves up one and lays down another thickness of paper, like mm-hmm. a glue gun. Mm-hmm. And after, this probably took an hour to print.
Wow.
And it printed, and the ball is movable inside because it printed the ball as it was printing the outside.
It's amazing. It really is. It really is. And the term additive manufacturing, is that different than typical manufacturing?
Yeah, so they don't call it this, but the corollary would be subtractive manufacturing. So if I was going to make this piece with the ball in the middle, you can hear it, I'd have to make multiple pieces to do this because I have to assemble it, right? But I'd start out with a piece of metal, and then I would use a drill, or I'd use a mill, or I'd use a lathe. All that's subtracting material. So you go to a machine shop, and right under all the machines is a big pile of metal. That's the subtractive part.
I see.
So that's the difference. Additive is only adding the material that you need for the product, versus subtractive is taking everything you don't need away.
And you have waste with the
waste.
The other. How about with this? Is there any waste product?
There is very little waste. The waste really comes in two forms. If you're printing something with overhang, so imagine you're printing something with a very large cantilever. Mm-hmm. You might need supports to hold up the cantilever as it's being printed. Now, once it's printed, you could remove the support, but to print it, it can't print into space because it's printing that layer. So it might have to build a support. So the supports, you'd throw those away. Mm-hmm. That's one. Mm-hmm. The other would be a print's gone bad. So I've said this technology is accessible, it's easy to use, but it's still it is leading edge, and it's not like printing like you do on your inkjet printer. Things go wrong, and things won't print right, and you got to restart it, and you got to monitor it. So the other source of scrap is just prints gone bad, you got to restart again.
Okay. And tell us about the industries that can really benefit from this technology. I understand that... Actually, I saw something online just the other day about in the automotive industry. They made a car.
Oh, yeah.
Part of the car in different parts.
So there's a picture on my website. Let me talk about some experimental stuff that's going on with vehicles and automotive. So they printed a unibody. So a unibody is where you have the chassis and the body combined. So in typical manufacturing, you have heavy-duty steel is your chassis, right? And there's your axles and holds the wheels and all that stuff. And then you put the pretty stuff on, the lightweight sheet metal that goes on top of it. So unibody is all at one piece, right? So they designed a new type of car, and they printed the entire unibody. It was a small prototype car, two-seater, but they were actually able to print all that. So they didn't print the tires. They didn't print the rubber. They printed the unibody. So these printers are all very material specific.
And can they use several different types of materials?
They can, but that's where the challenge gets in. Okay. The most simple is one material at a time. Mm-hmm. So one of the MakerBots I have can do two different types. It's the same kind of material, but it can use different colors of material. But that's where the complexity really goes up, is if you have to do more than one material.
Mm-hmm. What kind of materials can they work with?
The most MakerBot uses two types of plastic, PLA, which is a corn derivative, and the other is ABS plastic.
Can they do metal?
Or
do they
not MakerBots, but there are printers that do metal. In this is where the explosion's really happening. So it's all about materials, and so if you're a business and you think about, well, what are you going to make? You first have to decide what do you want it to be made out of in the end, and then you look at the printers that can do that. Mm-hmm. So plastic is the most common for the consumer, or the lower end of the industrial space would just be plastic, making prototypes and that. But if you want to get into functional prototypes, all sorts of metals are available. Mm-hmm. There's wood fiber that's available that's actually stainable. Mm-hmm. There's Kevlar printers. There's carbon fiber printers. For $5,000, you can buy a Kevlar printer that can print something 10 by 10 by 10, 10
wow.
inches. $5,000. It's crazy, right?
Yeah. And the cost used to be ridiculous.
Yeah, or just impossible.
Right. So let's talk about some other areas that that your products can actually work in. I really like what you're doing, or what's happening in the healthcare space there. You were talking mm-hmm. about some applications like in the trachea.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Probably the most, that's something I came across. I was at MakerBot headquarters in Brooklyn just 2 weeks ago. And they were telling us about some interesting stories. So it's common for people to get cancer of the trachea or the windpipes. And this story is on my website, but they'll remove a piece of it, and they need to basically patch in some other material, right? So they are using BioInk. They're using a standard MakerBot printer. And that I described, that glue gun, those are called extruders. So they replace the extruder with, it looks like a syringe, and loaded the syringe with biomaterial. And the biomaterial contains cartilage. It's like a mush, but it's cartilage molecules of the patient mixed with the bonding agents, and it lays that down. And they can create a custom, exactly how big around and exactly how it's going to fit, and print that.
Wow.
And the plan is that they haven't done it yet, but the plan is that they will then implant those. There will be no rejection because it's using the patient's own biomass.
Right.
And
sounds
crazy,
great.
Right?
Yeah. So, and tell us about the space program use. It's pretty, I think that's an area that they've had some experience in as well.
Yeah. So there is a lot. There was just the first part printed in space was just done recently. So they actually printed a part in space, because the idea is, for long-term space exploration, you can't carry all these spare parts. So you need to be able to create them when you need them. So they've proven it. The technology works in space. They do it. NASA, they are a big user of MakerBot. Basically, if you're designing something at NASA, you've got a MakerBot printer on your desk.
Okay.
And then something I read most recently, it's the United Launch Alliance. They're using a production part. And I like to use this as an example of, you know, people tend to think, oh, 3D printing is making plastic parts, and, you know, you can't do something real with plastic. This is in a booster rocket for a jet engine. The part before, the assembly, I should say, had 160 parts using traditional manufacturing. Redesigning it with 3D printing in mind in metal, they reduced it to 6 parts. Mm-hmm. 160 parts to 6 parts. Now, if you're a business person, think about, now you don't need to plan for 160 parts, you plan for 6 parts. Think about how, you know, keeping stock of all those parts. Think about your assembly instructions. Think about how fast it is assembled on the shop floor. Crazy economies.
Right. And also the home hobbyist is someone that could use this technology too. Tell us about some uses there.
Sure. I've got a really good example of this. Recently remodeled a 50-year-old house. And they have these Miami-style windows. So piece of window frame on each side of the window. We have four pieces. My worker lost one of the pieces. Okay, great. Thinking, I'll just buy a new piece. Wrong. 50 years old, that company's not even in business anymore. And aluminum's worth money. It's been melted if it's scrap. Mm-hmm. So what I did is I had an existing piece. I inked it up, inked up the end of it, the profile, inked that up, put it on a piece of paper, took a picture of that, moved that into my CAD program, and in CAD, just like you would with real metal, I extruded it. And so I duplicated that aluminum part out of plastic, took it to the window shop, and said, can you put my window together? And after their jaws kind of dropped, thinking, how in the world did you make this? They put it together, and it worked perfect.
Wow. That's great. So let's talk about education. I really like your motto is think it, make it.
Mm-hmm.
That's really great. Now, there's some innovative programs, I think, for third graders that you can tell us about.
Yeah, so this I learned about this when I was at MakerBot a couple weeks ago. Working with MakerBot, we have a big focus into education right now. We have a curriculum that's been developed for kids, and we're ready to deliver that, Create 3D is. But this program is using 3D printing. This is going to get people thinking. Using 3D printing is not the end in itself, but the means to the end. So this school wanted to teach their third graders about business, which I thought was pretty cool anyway. Mm-hmm. Good for them. So if they're going to teach their kids about business, they wanted them to have a real experience. So they needed a product, something they could make, and then they could sell, right? Mm-hmm. So they organized the class, hey, what product are we going to make? And then they didn't do the design. That wasn't important. So somebody designed it for them, but then they printed it on the MakerBot. So they had something to sell that was not something a third grader would make, if you know what I mean.
Right.
So they took their school logo, made a paperweight or something, and they sold it. So they had a great lesson in what business is all about. They had a little bit of research and development and identifying what product they were going to take to market and figuring out how to market that and then actually selling it and running a little business. So their 3D printing was just a means to the end.
So let's talk about the kinds of, you mentioned earlier that you are interested in letting education for kids
mm-hmm.
Know more about this. So tell us about those programs you're working on now.
So two major thrusts right now. So we are scheduling a tech camp for the first week of August. The tech camp is to take to take kids from 0 to 100, so to speak. You don't need to know anything about 3D printing or design, and we'll teach you how to use these inexpensive and usually free design tools. They're dumbed down. It's not what an engineer would use. The one we like the most is Tinkercad. Mm-hmm. It's web-based, browser-based, and it uses primitive shapes, so they don't have to know programming or anything, and they can play with it. It's like a sandbox. And then we'll have printers there to print their own custom designs. So in 1 week, over 4 days, 3 hours a day, we'll expose kids to the fun in how engaging 3D printing and design can be. Mm-hmm. The other is we have this curriculum from MakerBot that we are going to roll out to schools. So we're looking to get engaged with schools. And this program can be delivered over an entire quarter or semester, or it could be a jam-packed tech camp kind of a thing. We'll do the training, or we'll train the teacher to deliver it. Mm-hmm. And then we would also like to see if these schools would be interested in purchasing like a tech lab mm-hmm. of 3D printers and scanners also, which is really an incredible part of this technology too, where you can scan a physical object and then play with it in your electronic sandbox and then print your new version.
Wow. And are the schools public, private, homeschooled,
yep.
or you have a preference?
We're just starting the marketing effort. I'm predicting it's going to be the easiest to work with private schools. Hmm. But we want to make contacts into public school and see if we can gain some access to some STEM funding for them. Mm-hmm. And then we're also going to have a program for homeschoolers. So where we can teach this material, it would just be virtual over the internet.
Wow. So I'm speaking with Mark Guthrie, the founder of Create 3D and Biz 360. Mark, you know, the time has really gone by quickly. We're almost at the half-hour mark here. So, you know, I just have a few more questions for you, though. But how many employees do you have now at Create3D?
Right now there are four of us all together.
Mm-hmm. And what are the roles?
So I've got Alex Kaufman. He's my head trainer. So he's responsible for putting the training curriculum together. Anna Van Lanningham, she's doing business development in the educational market. Mm-hmm. And Donna Talbert, who's doing sales.
Great. And, you know, this segues into the interview tip of the week. So if somebody was applying to Create3D or Biz 360, what one piece of advice would you give them?
All right. So I learned this from when I hired people at Hewlett-Packard. So what I would recommend for the interviewee is think about your prospective employer. What specific skill sets are they looking for? What are they really needing for that position? And then very carefully think through your background of where you've been able to demonstrate that skill. And not just, oh, I did that, but think about the detail, very detailed. What was your role? What was the outcome? What were the obstacles? What were the success points? Make it as real as possible from your memories and make sure that you communicate that during the interview.
Great. And what plans do you have for the future for Create3D and Biz 360? Is franchising an option, for example?
Well, so, you know, I have a passion for kids. As a country, we are lagging behind the rest of the world in hard sciences and engineering skills. And I see 3D printing and 3D design being a fuel to ignite kids' interest in these harder sciences. I mean, so when we're playing around with Tinkercad, they're really learning how to be engineers. They don't even know it. Mm-hmm. So what I see, and my plan also for delivering of the training, is to use university engineering students. They understand design, which is really important. So I'm putting together this ecosystem. MakerBot is a key part of that. And I'd like to see this training curriculum for schools be rolled out nationwide, and I think it would fit very well with a franchising model.
Mm-hmm. Well, great. And if somebody wants to get a hold of you or learn more about Create3D and your programs, your educational programs, how can they do that?
So the easiest way is to just send me an email at info@create-3d.biz. Remember the .biz, we're not .com, we're .biz. So info@create-3d.biz. Or feel free to give me a call at 727-342-0804.
That's great, Mark. Hey, listen, thanks so much for being here today, and I hope you'll be a guest again as your company grows.
Thank you very much. It's been a real pleasure. Enjoy your view, Dean, and it's been a real pleasure talking to you.
Okay, thanks so much. My guest today has been Mark Guthrie, the founder of Create3D and Biz 360. And now it's time for Job Talk Alumni Update. One of the first things I want to mention is about our sponsor of this program, Eagle Datagistics. We're definitely looking for some advanced Oracle DBAs and developer skills. So if you have that experience, you want to make sure you send me your resume, and I'll make sure it gets to the right folks. And also, the St. Petersburg Arts Alliance, I really want to mention this. They partnered with the City of St. Petersburg Office of Cultural Affairs and the Arts Advisory Committee to establish an individual artist grant program. And the grants, they now have announced the recipients of their inaugural individual artist grant program. And I just want to say congratulations to all of them who have been selected. I just want to mention their names real quickly, and because it's such a great achievement on their part. We have Betty Soto, Jennifer Zellner, Tom Civicwill, April Hartley, Melissa Youngbluth, David Manson, Mark Stevens, Yael LaFerd, and James Olson, Helen Hansen French, and Elizabeth Baker. So congratulations to all of them for participating in the program and being selected. And also, now the shout-outs that we have for today go to Mark in Texas. Good luck with your interviews this week, and if you ever get out this way, I look forward to meeting you here in St. Pete. And to Teresa in Canada, hope you get a chance soon to come and visit St. Petersburg in the Tampa area. If you come visit, I know you're not going to want to leave. There are many employment opportunities here for you and throughout Florida. And I want to thank you all for listening to Job Talk and for tuning in to RadioSt.Pete.com. You should check out the great music, including local musicians who are featured here. And new shows are in production as the website keeps getting better and better. You can choose your favorite style of music 24 hours a day, and including Maine oldies, jazz, and classical. Other interesting programs you might enjoy are the live broadcast, like Suncoast Tiger Bay Luncheon. Will Koontz hosts the homemade broadcast, and the Indie Circuit with Mao airs on Sundays at 10 Eastern Time, 10 p.m. Eastern Time. So be sure to check out the website often and see what's new. You can download the free app and listen anywhere you take your phone, tablet, or computer. So check it out. That's RadioSt.Pete.com. Also, if you enjoy listening to the program, please tell your friends and let me know if you have any suggestions for future guests on Job Talk. You can send those suggestions to me at DeanLogan@RadioSt.Pete.com. And I do look forward to your comments and suggestions. My guest next week is Desiree Guzman, the sales director for Nexigy, a growing company founded in Latin America with offices throughout Florida and one right here in Tampa. So please tune in for that interview. It should be a good one. And I want to take this time to thank Joe, Chuck, Richard, Hari, my engineers Dan and Sean, and all the Eagles for their help. And as always, I want to end Job Talk with this final thought and say to everyone listening, if you're thinking about relocating your family or business and are looking for a great place to live, work, and play, you should come visit and take a look at all St. Pete and Tampa Bay has to offer. I'm glad I did. I think you'll be glad you did, too. So thanks for listening, and until next time when we talk about jobs and Job Talk, this is Dean Logan. Take care, everybody.
You have been listening to Job Talk with Dean Logan, a presentation of RadioSt.Pete.com and Eagle Datagistics. Eagle Datagistics is one of the premier Oracle Gold partners on the East Coast, providing hardware and software sales, data recovery, DBA services, and recruiting. With more than 10 years in business, Eagle Datagistics in downtown St. Petersburg. Job Talk with Dean Logan came to you live from our studios inside Eagle Datagistics on the 10th floor of the Plaza Tower in downtown St. Petersburg. RadioSt.Pete.com.